Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down, burn down. The system may have the exit pool. Wake up the silence.
Welcome to the Star Chamber Show, episode number 23. So, yeah, building up an impressive number of shows now. We've been doing this every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, follow us on Twitter, @StarChamberShow, spelled out Star Chamber Show, or follow us on Facebook at the same address, facebook.com/StarChamberShow. But tonight we've got a great evening set for you, and one of our co-hosts has to be silent now because he is actually going to be put in the guest seat of the Star Chamber tonight. But Alex Brown and Selah Janelle will be handling the co-hosting duties with me, and as they both get ready here in just under 2 weeks for blog tours with their new releases, they're going to be doing a full week of all kinds of cool stuff for, of course, Alex with Southern Haunts 2, Devils in the Darkness, and Selah with their brand-new cross-genre tour de force called Old School and first book of the Kingdom City Chronicles. So we got some great stuff coming up with both of our other co-hosts tonight. I wanted to mention that right off the bat. Busy week. We had R.J. Sullivan's second Red Lotus book get released. Actually, it's e-book right now. It's the second in his Red Lotus series, and it's Red Lotus Innocence Lost, available on all the cool e-book platforms. Science fiction. It's a great sci-fi offering, very different from the stuff he does, like with Haunting Blue, Virtual Blue, and all the stuff that he's known for, Haunting Obsession. This is definitely space opera, sci-fi, some really, really cool adventure stuff. And then I want to give a shout-out to the great Peter Welmerich, the mighty Peter Welmerich up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We finally have a zombie book at Seven Star Press. It is Transport, book one of the Transport series, following the adventure of the Huron, this gigantic armored vehicle and the military unit that's with it, great military thriller aspect to it, set in a zombie apocalypse kind of setting. It's got a very well-known artist, Tim Holtrop, who did two interiors on this one, just gorgeous. And, of course, the cover art by our very own Jason C. Connolly, who did an amazing three covers for Peter's trilogy that actually fit together in this really cool panorama. It's really, really cool when you see the whole thing put together, but you're just going to have to wait a little bit to see all that, of course. But, yeah, today the Kindle version went live, and I think Nook should be live by now, and then, of course, all the other ebook versions, and then soft cover will be coming out as of next week. And also within our camp, I'd like to extend a happy birthday greeting to Alexandra Christian, who is hopefully out there listening somewhere, and want to wish her a happy birthday, and then also welcome back Susan Roddy. She's not going to be with us tonight as a co-host, but she's getting settled back in the Carolinas, and she's going to be hopefully joining us again next week, so I just want to give her a quick hi and shout-out, and then, of course, our rebel Travis Simpson. I know he's listening tonight, so I'll say hi to him as well. So anyway, I have rambled on quite a bit here, so I wanted to get into the show. We are going to have some call-ins tonight, so about middle of the hour, be on listening. The call number is 619-639-4616. Again, it's 619-639-4616, and we will take some call-ins later in the show for tonight's guest, who, as of March, became a best-selling author, known very much for his horror work and very well established in the horror world. He unleashed an urban fantasy series, Legacy of the Gods, last year with Poseidon's Children. And tonight, just on the cusp of releasing the long-anticipated follow-up to that, titled Hades Disciples. Without further ado, I wanted to welcome best-selling author Michael West, guest at the Star Chamber show tonight.
Woo!
It's good to be here.
I'll just be on the receiving end.
Yes. I'm on the grill tonight.
Yes, you're in the hot spot, and so no rules, anything goes. And yeah, we are going to open her up to the audience, so you never know what's going to happen then. But great to have you aboard, and like I said, it was a huge March for you. So let's talk about how you feel right now with the sequel coming out and with the big March you just had.
Well, it's a little surreal. It's growing up reading, Stephen King, Clive Barker, Michael Crichton. I always dreamed that one day I'd have a best-selling novel of my own, and then to see it happen, it was very rewarding. It was it's like when I clicked on one of the nights that it was number one, I clicked on there, and they had the little banner on the front page that said number one bestseller, and that was a good feeling.
Yeah, I must say, like I said, I know you're definitely a down to earth guy. It's one of the things I love about you, because no matter how well you've done, you've always been so cool to everybody, and you've also been very supportive of other people, and it's just a rare quality, especially in a very ego driven art world, to find people like that. So I will brag for you, but when I saw that, I saw you ahead of Stephen King's book, and once you cracked into the top five that night, oh man, I thought that was just so cool. But it had to be kind of surreal to look. I mean, we're not talking like we're not talking the free chart. We're talking the national sales chart. I mean, you were a notch right there, notch right in front of Stephen King. I mean, that had to be weird.
I woke up one morning and I think I was number three in horror overall, and Stephen King was number four with Dr. Sleep. And I was like, am I still asleep? am I really seeing this?
Well, I know you were pretty pumped about it. You guys did it. Oh, sorry.
Well, that was just really, really unbelievable. But I just thought it was a little surreal when Cinema of Shadows and The Shining were side by side. I thought that was appropriate.
That was so cool. But I mean, it's a very strong book. I mean, it's got a slew of reviews, and so nobody doubted. Like I said, it would I think go over very well. And as people of course discover the other Harmony novels and stuff, just helps. And then of course it didn't hurt that you made a big appearance in the ads in Fangoria and Gore Zone this month too, which was definitely
right.
A wild thing to get to see that on the newsstand.
There again, it's the last couple of months have just been like my childhood bucket list coming true. It's like ever since I was 10 years old, I wanted to be in the pages of Fangoria, and then at first I thought when I was 10 that it would be them interviewing me on the set of my new film, and then as I got older and got more into writing short stories and novels, then I thought, well, they're going to be interviewing me on the set of the movie based on my stuff or about my books. And having my picture there filling up half a page in Fangoria was a good feeling. It's like I walked into the bookstore and of course I'm buying like two or three copies, and my wife is like, don't you want some left for other people to see?
Like the battle. It's like you want to like get everything to like preserve it for yourself, but then you want other people to see it too.
Well, yeah,
that's always my thing.
Well, I always like to have two copies of my stuff, one that I keep kind of pristine and on the shelf,
yeah,
and don't touch, and then one that I can, you know, share with people.
Yeah. Definitely,
and I've seen
your
conventions running around soaking up memorabilia, so I know you've got a collector mind, because you've always had armfuls of stuff at conventions.
Well,
so,
you know, that to me, you know, I've been writing professionally. Well, I've been writing as long as I can remember, but I've been writing professionally now for 10 years. And that to me has been the most surreal aspect of this whole thing is that, you know, I'm at conventions, you know, meeting, you know, Robert Englund and George Romero and people that, you know, I have, you know, followed their work for as long as I can remember. And then people, you know, some of the celebrities are coming up to my table and buying my stuff and saying, you know, oh, I've heard of that. And you know, it's just very, very surreal.
Well, my God, you got the rock goddess herself, Lita Ford, to pose with your book. I mean, how cool is, I mean, for me, I'm a metal geek, so,
yeah.
I mean.
Yeah,
totally.
Like,
I pretty much, I tell everyone, like, I want to be Michael West when I grow up, because, I mean, hell.
I mean, being called the badass by Lita Ford was probably among the top, but that and to have, you know, to have you know, some of those celebrities come up and especially the guy who played Tommy Doyle in Halloween.
Right.
I had a show with Spook House and I had quoted his character in Spook House and you know, to have him come up and want a copy of Spook House was just like, wow, you know, this is just weird.
So cool.
Yeah, didn't you have a freaking combo with Dee Wallace too at one of the conventions?
I've met Dee a few times, I've met, there are so many celebrities that, you know, I've met, it's one of those things where I can't believe I finally met so-and-so, and then, you know, it's like, you know, there are people that I see at several cons, and I think, well, you know, they've seen hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, every month when they go to these shows.
Yeah.
And yet they'll come up and they'll say hi, or they'll you know, I've been talking to other people and I've, you know, felt a tap on my shoulder and turn around, and it's you know, Derek Mears, who was Jason in the remake of Friday the 13th and whatnot, just saying, hey Mike, how you doing, you know, and everything. I mean, you know, they remember me, and it just freaks me out. But you know, I think it has to be a prerequisite. Well, I think it's a prerequisite.
Judging by your Amazon reviews.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, judging by your Amazon reviews, it shows that you've worked very hard to get to the status that you are now. And just looking over the titles that you have on there, there is not a single one of your standalone books that has a minimum amount of reviews. It's all about 35 reviews and up, and I mean, it's just amazing that you've been able to do that. And I've actually said to myself, one day I'm going to be like Michael West and have that many reviews. And this is a question that I have since you. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to say, well, you know, I mean, the whole reason I you know, I can do what I do is because of the readers, you know, and I really owe everything to them. It's like I've been lucky enough to call my fan base my faithful readers, and it's, you know, and then they are, you know, they're there to you know, as soon as a new book is announced, they're there to buy it and you know, to review it as soon as they get done and whatnot, and you know, it's like it's, you know, a lot of people. And I always wonder why a lot of authors get embarrassed, it seems, to ask people who've read the book to review their book. And, you know, to me, it's you know, either they will or they won't. But, you know, if I get an email from a reader or whatnot and says, hey, I just finished this book, you know, it was so wonderful, I loved it. And I said, well, hey, I'm glad you really enjoyed it. If you get a chance, once you post a review on, you know, Amazon or Goodreads or whatnot, and it would help me out. And 9 times out of 10, they do.
And, you know, reviews, for those who are listening, those are like gold to authors. If you ever want to, you know, just help your favorite author out, it doesn't matter if they're number one best-selling or not number one best-selling, every review helps. And I do have a few questions for you, Mr. West, regarding the writing aspect, because these are questions that I receive quite frequently. And since you're very established, I would love for people to hear your answers on it. When it comes down to copyright, because you had mentioned that you had quoted Tommy Doyle in one of your books, how does copyright work when you're writing a piece? Is it, like, let's say, for example, I've had numerous people come up to me and say, oh, well, I compare one of my characters in this book to Joan Jett. I even say she looks like Joan Jett. How would the copyright work with that?
Well, you know, that is a good question. I mean, I've never, you know, had any problem with, you know, talking about celebrities or whatnot in the course of conversations between characters or anything of that nature. As long as you're not actually using the, you know, the lyrics of a song. I mean, basically, if you can go what I do a lot of times, especially when I'm doing quotes for like the beginnings of books, because I always like to have a quote at the beginning of the book, and so I go to, you know, there are a lot of quotes that I like that are favorite quotes of mine. But if I'm looking for something appropriate that I may not be aware of, I'll go to a lot of quote sites and look at, you know, quote books. I've got several quote books that, you know, that divided into topics like, you know, heaven and hell or you know, war and things of that nature. And just, you know, if it's a quote that's a famous quote that's been quoted time and time again, you know, you're fairly safe to use it because you cite, you know, you don't have your character say that as if they came up with it. In other words, you know, if you're going to use the quote, you need to use the quote, you need to cite the quote. My interpretation or what I've been told, I should say, is that you can refer to something, but you can't use the actual content of that. So, right. For instance, I can say that I was listening to "Bad Out of Hell" by Meatloaf, but I can't, you know, use the song lyrics in the course of the book. I can say that I was sitting around, I was watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I can't, like, you know, say, you know, use actual dialogue from the show in the book. So, I mean, you can refer to things as long as you don't use them word for word. Like you can say, like you said, a character looks like Joan Jett, but, you know, and you can even say it looks like she was about to break into I Love Rock and Roll. But if you start having people in the background singing, you know, and quote things in the song, then that's, yeah. And some people have even said that, you know, I've heard some legal interpretations that you can use X number of words or X number of lines from a song or a poem or whatnot, and you can get away with it. And I've never felt comfortable doing that. I steer clear from that. I mean, I use titles and I use names, I don't use them in a derogatory. You know, I don't usually say anything disparaging about these people that I'm comparing to, because want to slander anyone or libel anyone, but if it's in print, it's slander. But anyway.
It's kind of one thing if it's like a pop culture reference, and another thing if it's like a direct quote. Because, I mean, you can reference a lot of pop culture stuff without actually saying word for word what something is.
And that's what I do, because my whole thing is that I want the books to feel as grounded in reality as possible. And so I do a lot of pulp cultural references, especially if it's a book that's set in a different time period. I do a lot of references, like, for instance, my novel The Y Game was set in the 80s, and since I grew up in the 80s, you know, there was a lot of stuff that was talked about and discussed and thrown around in that was to set the mood and the time. But,
I love it when authors do that, because for me, that's like really... That makes, like, whatever you're reading really homey, because if, like, you get a reference or something, like, I love Neil Gaiman does that a lot, and he's a big Bowie fan. So whenever I catch references like that, I'm just kind of like, oh, you, that's awesome. Like, it just makes
right.
it work that much better for me.
Right, right. You know, and especially if you're wanting to capture a certain, you know, a certain country, for instance,
yes.
in Hades Disciples, there's a lot of references to pop culture in Japan because there's a part of the book that's set in Japan. And so I really wanted to capture, you know, and I talked to people who'd actually lived in Japan for a time and studied up on it and whatnot, because I wanted to capture, you know, I even, you know, watched actual YouTube videos of people who took YouTube phone video, cell phone videos when they walked into Japanese grocery stores, just because I wanted to capture that whole experience of what it was like to experience the culture of Japan while you're there.
That's really
well,
interesting.
Michael finally goes to Japan. I was going to say that when Michael finally goes to Japan, he'll be the biggest thing since Godzilla. That's what's going to happen.
Godzilla, man, I'm counting the days. I'm counting the days.
speaking of Alex,
know
Alex had mentioned
a really good shirt that says I'm huge in Japan. I was saying I don't know how it would be to get a shirt that says I'm huge in Japan. That might not work too well. Because it can be taken many, many different ways. It just depends on the eye of the beholder, really.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Now,
well,
I just have some other questions.
Okay, go ahead.
It's regarding you submitting two anthologies and also creating an anthology. Now, could you shine some light on this for other authors that might be inexperienced on doing this? Of course, creating an anthology and submitting to one are two completely different experiences. When you are creating an anthology, what are you looking for? And when you're going into an anthology, what do you do to make sure that you get a place in that book?
Well, as far as creating the anthology, when I did Vampires Don't Sparkle, I was actually approached by a publisher at the time. That anthology had a very storied past, but I was approached by a publisher at the time that was getting ready to start a horror line, and they were asking some authors that, you know, the person who was basically the showrunner basically for that line was asking authors that he knew if they had ideas for anthologies and what were interested in editing. And I've been pitching an idea to some publisher friends of mine for some time since the whole Twilight craze started, that, you know, you ought to do a vampire anthology and call it Vampires Don't Sparkle and just have, you know, really old-fashioned feral vampires, just vampires as animals and as creatures of the night rather than, you know, the mopey teenagers that we see in the movies and TV shows. And so, some publishers were like, yeah, you know, that we ought to do that. That'd be fun, you know, but nothing ever came of it. And so when they actually approached me for an idea for an anthology, that was, of course, the first thing that came out of my mouth. And they're like, oh, yes, you need to do that. You need to do that. And so that, for some reason, that publisher kind of, I don't know if it's because they were just starting out or what the situation was, but those projects kind of fell by the wayside. And so then I approached a different publisher with it. And by that time, I had a friend of mine, Sarah Larson, had been diagnosed with breast cancer, and I had wanted to donate proceeds from the book to cancer research in her name. And I approached some other publishers about it, and they were all for it, but then that kind of fell apart because of, you know, the scheduling, and you know, I wanted to have the book out, you know, to coincide with the release of the final Twilight films so that it would, you know, be the counterpoint to that. And the publishing schedules were pretty tight. So one of the publisher I had it with kind of said, you know, I know that you're wanting to get this out, and I know you're wanting to raise money for this charity, and I'm not going to be able to get it out anytime soon, so I'm going to give it back to you. And then, of course, I went to my home at Seven Star Press and said, hey, can we make this happen? And Seven Star made it happen. So, but as far as the with that anthology, appropriately enough, since it was a vampire anthology, it was invitation only. And so I invited my friends in, basically, and authors I knew and respected and knew that I could get some good product from. I asked them to submit something to me, and I was afraid that with it being a vampire anthology, I would get a bunch of stories that were very similar in tone and subject matter, but I couldn't have asked for more disparate stories. They were, you know, no two were alike. You know, we had everything from Civil War to space to, robot vampires and Viking vampires, and we had a little bit of everything. And it was just really, really, the hardest part of that was to try to arrange them in some kind of way that the stories weren't jarring when you went from one subject matter to another. So that was the hardest part of that. As far as submitting to anthologies personally, I'm kind of at a weird stage in my career, and I mean, it's a nice stage in that usually if I write a short story now, it's because somebody's asked me to. And so, you know, when I first started out, I would just write stories that kind of came to me, and then I would try to find a home for them and see what would be a good fit, which is nice in one way, because then you're only writing if you're sparked with if you have a spark of an idea. So you're passionate about something, or there's something that's really bothering you that you really just want to get down on paper. So, but then again, you don't know if it'll ever see the light of day, and you have to, you know, shop it around and research the markets and, be very patient and be very persistent. And I was lucky enough early in my career that I was very patient and I was very persistent. And I ended up, just about everything I wrote ended up finding a home somewhere. And then once my stuff started being read by different editors and they started to know the kind of thing that I wrote and the kind of subject matters that I'd like to touch on, that's when people started coming to me and saying, hey, I've got this anthology that I'm working on. I need a story about, you know, an urban legend. Can you do one of these legends? And I would say, yeah, I'd like to. And I said, well, which one were you thinking of? And they'd say, well, this one. And I could tell that they'd read my stuff because it was basically kind of a love story. And I think most of my stories, or just about all of my stories, deal with some kind of love or relationship. And it just, you know, there are different stages in the relationship, whether it's a young love just starting out or people who are kind of hit a rut and they're kind of been in the relationship for a while and they're trying to keep it going, or whether it's, you know, people who are, you know, just friends or families and the ties that bind them. But I think all of my work has something to do with relationships, and I could tell based on the kind of the urban legends that I was shown that they had read my stuff and that's the kind of thing that they wanted me to do. And so that's persisted to this day. Usually if I'm writing a short story, it's because I've been asked to submit to this anthology or that magazine or something of that nature.
Very cool. Well, we are right now nearing the midpoint of the show, so I want to be able to just say that if anybody would like to call in with a question, anybody brave enough to call in for a question or comment for Michael, we're gonna leave the line open at 619-639-4616, 619-639-4616. And that being said, too, also, Michael, we have a special tonight to unveil for Hades Disciples, which we probably should do.
At
7starpress.com and 7starpress.blogspot.com, we have, and you can fill in the rest.
Yes, we are announcing that tonight the Hades Disciple, Legacy of the Gods Book 2, Hades Disciple, the limited edition signed hardcover, limited to just 75 copies, is now up for pre-order. So if you want to be one of the first to have the limited edition signed hardcover, and if you want a low number, you should back now. Because it's first come, first served.
It is open as we speak.
It's open as we speak. So you need to get you need to get thy to thy computer and get your copy. And also, there are still a few copies, hardcover copies of Poseidon's Children. And if you order a hard copy, a hardcover limited edition signed copy of Poseidon's Children with your signed limited edition hardcover of Hades Disciples, you only pay one shipping and handling charge for both.
So there you go. All right, and that is live as we speak. That opened up during the show here, so that is a brand new offer. So there we go. And so now back to you all. I just had to make sure we got that little message in there.
Sweet.
Yes,
so Michael,
yes, thank you,
one of the things Michael, one of the things I've wondered, since we both kind of have different interests and we both kind of come from not really similar backgrounds, but, I mean, we're sort of into the same stuff. I'm curious, as a horror writer, and I have my own thoughts on the matter, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Do you feel, you know, I think maybe this may be a more modern trend, but maybe not. Do you feel sometimes that people, especially with that genre, like you were saying, a lot of your work has themes about relationships and love and things like that, and you happen to write in the horror genre. Do you feel like people these days write kind of too much to genre, like they try too hard to make it a certain thing, and, you know, that then the story kind of comes secondary? Or how do you feel about the balance between story and whatever genre you're writing for?
Well, and to be honest, you know, like I was saying earlier, I don't write to any genre per se. I mean, I write about these characters and their relationships and the things that come into play that keep them apart or add stress to their lives. And, you know, in most everyday people's lives, it's their finances or it's, you know, family obligations or things of that nature. In my stories, it's demons and monsters and shape-shifting ghouls. So, you know,
And
for some reason the stories always gravitate to that. I mean, I could, you know, I've always said that, you know, because I grew up in the 80s and I dealt with a lot of things that the characters deal with in the wide game, I've always said that that's probably the closest thing to an autobiography that I'd ever write. But of course, I didn't have demons and cornfields and serial killers in my youth, but everything that the characters deal with, you know, they always say write what you know, and that doesn't mean that if you sell cars for a living that all of your characters have to sell cars, but you may know things about dealing with people, and you can incorporate that into your characters and the way they deal with people. And, you know, if you're a mechanic who services air conditioners and you want to write sci-fi, you could write about a mechanic on a starship, you know, or something of that nature. You don't necessarily have to write the same thing that is going on in your everyday life, but you can use aspects of that to make your characters seem real. And you know, the main thing that I have a problem with in modern horror, and this is more in the movie side than it is in the novel side, but it just seems like everything is about the big bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like you can have the coolest monster that's ever been on screen, or you can have, you know, the greatest plot twist that has ever been devised. But if nobody cares about your characters, what does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, to me, that's always the thing. It's like if I can get the characters to ring true, if I can get people to care about them, you know, for instance, in Hades Disciples, what I just finished, the one that just went on sale tonight, when I got to the end and I gave it to my pre-readers and they were coming back and saying, oh, at this part I just broke down and cried, and at this part I felt this, and at this part I wanted to yell, yay, and all this stuff. And it's everything that I wanted someone to feel or experience, they were feeling and experiencing. And to me, that's the greatest thing is when you can affect people in some way.
Oh, I agree. That's agreed. I mean, I think that's part of why we gravitate to entertainment in general is, stories are powerful, but you want to feel for people. You want to kind of, have that empathy for characters. I mean, it's pointless if you don't care about them.
Right, and this is actually, once the book is out, that's actually my favorite part of the whole process.
Yeah.
Because, if you're an actor on a stage, you get the automatic, you get the applause, you get the laughs, you get the to hear people sniffling in the in the dark.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you're a writer, it's just you and your keyboard, and you have no idea if anything's working until you actually get some feedback either from your pre-readers or once it's out in the reviews. Actually, the way I structured this book and actually the whole rest of the series is due to reviews that I read of the first book, Poseidon's Children, because there were critiques of that book. And while overall everyone had a positive experience, there were some critiques and things that took people out of it. And so I said, in this book I definitely worked very hard to try to minimize that and to make the story structure flow in a way that was easier to keep up with and wasn't so bam, 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 bam.
Heavy.
Silence. And silence.
Yeah, I was waiting for Michael on such a roll there.
I was
surely going to
be back.
I know.
I know, everybody just stopped listening
just
and just went on with their own stuff.
He's revealing secrets. We gotta glean all this. But, wow, very cool.
Well, I know, with obviously the Legacy of the Gods series is very into different Greek stuff, but you also incorporate a lot of different cultures into the books. Has this been, an interest of yours for a while, mythology and just worldwide legends or different cultures?
Yeah, it really has because, growing up, especially, it's like most of the legends and the myths you had are all the Western, the vampires, the ghosts, the werewolves. But, that's just the tip of the iceberg. If you go into, Middle American, Aztec mythology, if you go to Asian mythology especially, I'm a huge fan of Asian mythology, if you go into Asian mythology, into Russian mythology, African mythology, there's just a wealth out there of just really cool, interesting myths and demons and legends and creatures and both good and bad that are just, things that when it's like people think I make a lot of the stuff up, and I do make a lot of stuff up, but a lot of a lot of the creatures, especially in the urban fantasy series, are based on actual myths from around the world, and I've kind of altered them to tie into the whole tapestry I'm trying to weave together for the legacy. But it's amazing that I don't have to twist it that much. It's amazing how many myths that cultures separated by oceans and time have similar, similarities to them. It's like I not that I'm a huge believer in it, but I love to sit down and watch on Fridays Ancient Alien marathons.
Awesome.
Just because, and a lot of stuff in the legacy comes from my research into, ancient astronauts and whatnot, just simply because, you get to a certain point and it makes sense, and then they make these huge leaps, and you're like, hold it, okay, you had me up until that.
Yeah. Well, that's what, reading the first book in the series, I always felt like you had a really good handle on it. You don't leap into crazy town anywhere, really. You keep a really good balance of the mythology and of the alien angle or whatever you want to call it and other stuff that it actually, it's a really good, soup. It's really okay, yeah, I could buy this. I could see this happening. It's just a great blend. And, nowhere does it, start reading, a cable show or something where it's, just goes right off the cliff somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody with wacky hair is there saying, it's all aliens. It's all aliens.
Yeah.
But that's why it took me a while really to get the legacy off the ground, because it is such kind of, as you said, a soup. There's fantasy, there's horror, there's, you know, I mean, a lot, especially with the, you know, Poseidon's Children, it was straight up Lovecraft in there.
Yes.
And really Lovecraft was a sci-fi writer, if you look at it.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of science fiction ideas and concepts in Lovecraftian lore. And so, I mean, you know, I just kind of, it's kind of like a smorgasbord, you know, you take what you want and you leave behind the rest.
Yeah. That's really cool. No, I totally agree with that. Like, I totally, not to compare, but, you know, like, in reading your book, it just seems so flawless, and I never really thought about the work that went into doing something like that until I was, like, trying to piece together my own book, and I just wanted to jump off a building. But I can only imagine the work that you put in on making all of that blend very well.
Yeah, it's if you would look at all the charts and graphs and storylines and art, you know, arcs and whatnot that I've laid out for the whole series, it's sometimes I get confused. It's like sometimes my pre-readers have to come to me and say, didn't in the last book you say this and now you say, like, you know, you're right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't imagine what George R. R. Martin does at you know.
People who I don't want to be, like, oh, man, I do not envy him at all.
Ahem.
Cry.
Hey, I'm still here.
I'm really glad that you brought up.
No, I'm not saying I wouldn't want to deal with that, because that's, like, that would be like facing down a tsunami on your own. Like, that's, I'm not bad-mouthing him at all. I'm just saying, for the grace of God, goodbye. Thank God it's not me.
Well, I'm just saying we have very similar structures, because I did the same ensemble cast structure that Martin does. It's very similar.
Ensembles are really important to me, because, you know, it's like that's another thing that people have commented about my work about, you know, it's like it feels like it's a bunch of people I know. And that's what I really strive to do. And I want my cast of characters to feel like people you know, like people that you see in everyday life. You know, I mean, I don't, you know, and for instance, I was just at the MoCon convention, where we talk a lot about, you know, writing the other, and writing for, you know, for instance, if you're a male, writing female characters, if you're a female, writing male characters, if you're Caucasian, writing African-American or whatnot. And, you know, especially the legacy books give me a really, really stretch my imagination in that way, because, you know, I have Asian characters, I have African-American characters, I have LGBT characters, you know, I have all kinds of different people that you, in your everyday life, interact with and are friends with and are, you know, part of your family and whatnot. And that you don't see reflected in other books, or if you do, they're either a stereotype or they're just there to die. They're not the heroes. And in my book, I try to put them in the forefront and say, look, you know, everyone is heroic. Everyone has the ability to be heroic. Everyone can, you know, in this situation, would deal with it in their own way, and here's how these characters deal with it.
And, you know, I think that's something that we don't see enough of in literature or movies, for that matter, in this day and age. And I honestly applaud you for doing that, because that is something that I've noticed in mainstream quite a bit. It just seems that it is the cookie-cutter character who is always the hero or the heroine to the story. And for us to receive something that could be considered a minority is just some. I believe it's wonderful to have that as main character, and it's something that I've worked with as well. And for any author who does that, I applaud them. Another thing that I wanted to point out is earlier you had mentioned about the amount of reference and research that you did while going into a fictional piece, and that is something I also want to applaud, because any author, may it be fiction, bathed in fiction is what we write, such as horror, there is still that amount of research that you need to do to see what you can do and move it over into your own subject, your own character. And I've come across a few people at cons that they're like, oh, well, I'm writing this horror story about vampires or werewolves or whatever. I'm like, oh, well, what's the research you've done on it? They're like, oh, well, I've watched The Howling and American Werewolf in London, and I've also watched, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's great, but what reference books have you read? Oh, no, yeah. I didn't figure it was needed. I'm just going by what's popular. And no,
there's so much
no,
cool stuff out there. That kills me. There's so much cool, like, unused stuff. Like, to me, it's just a travesty because you get a bunch of titles or movies that are all similar. Instead of, like, going back and finding little avenues of things that you could really do the subject matter justice. To me, that's just a travesty.
Well, you know, it's like
researching other cultures.
Right, I mean, there's so much to say the vampire myth that's never touched on. Like, for instance, vampires can't cross running water.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
or the having to count the knots or count the seeds or whatever, the counting thing.
Right.
Oh,
well, like,
that one
for instance,
too. Yeah.
I mean, that's why Alan Moore is you know, just always been a hero to me, because he's one of the only people that I know of that in the Swamp Thing comics wrote about vampires being destroyed by running water. You know, and it's just like, finally someone has used that, you know.
Well, I know of somebody that has crossed lots of running water. In fact, she's calling from a long distance, Michael. You have a very cool surprise caller tonight. I can't believe it. It's awesome. So for tonight's first caller, welcome to the show. You are, let's make sure you are before I say it. Yes, you are live with Michael. Jessica Lay from Australia calling in for Michael West.
Oh, my.
Hi, Michael. Hello.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good.
Excellent. I just at the very end, I was able to call in because I've been out, so sorry for missing most of the show.
That's all right. I'm sure it will be available for your listening pleasure at any time on demand.
Indeed. I do have one question, because I figured if I'm going to call in, I must have a question for you. So I hope I haven't already asked previously in interviews. But as I know that you are very, very, very obsessed with T-shirts, and I myself have a very small collection, nothing compared to yours, I was wondering, out of all those many T-shirts, do you have one that you're dying for that hasn't actually been made or created as of yet, that you're desperate to get your hands on?
Every time, I'm very into T-shirts, as you said, and there's several T-shirt sites that always have me fill out surveys every year, and one of the shirts that I always ask for are either Humanoids from the Deep or a Queen Alien shirt.
Yeah.
Because most of the shirts that you see for aliens are just, you know, have the regular Xenomorph or whatnot.
Right.
Or I've seen some that have, like, the life cycle on there. But most, you know, hardly any of them are, you know, not since at least 86, have had the Queen on there. And so I'm dying to have a shirt with the Queen on it. And Humanoids from the Deep. I had a shirt for Humanoids from the Deep that I outgrew, and my son actually has it now, that someone put out you know, about 10 years ago. But I haven't seen a really good new one, and I would love that, especially with you know, especially when I was out doing signings and appearances for Poseidon's Children, I was like going, oh, if only I had a good Humanoids from the Deep show.
Yeah.
but yeah,
well,
it's like, you know,
Alien Queen shirt.
Yes, yes, I would love to have the Alien Queen shirt.
Cool. If you see one now, I have to have one, so let me know.
Okay. So I have a question for you, Jess. I know you enjoyed Poseidon's Children, so are you looking forward to the new one?
Indeed, and I just spotted on Facebook that hardcover is available or will be, if I'm not mistaken.
It just went up for sale tonight, the hardcover, yes, the signed hardcover.
Excellent. I will have to place an order for that one, too.
All right. Well, you were one of the first people to review Poseidon's Children, so I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on the continuation of the series.
So am I. I definitely enjoyed it, so I'm looking forward to the rest of it. How many of the books in the series will there be?
There will be four. The next one, which I've been kind of taking a hiatus from it just to breathe, but I have done some preliminary work on the next one. The next one is Zeus's Warriors, and that will be out next year.
Next year. Very good.
Yeah.
I'll put an order in for that one, too. I'm sure Stephen will hook me up.
I'm sure he will.
Jess of the legendary site, Jess resides here.
Yes, legendary. Thank you for that. Everyone should visit.
We will. Believe me, I'm working on it. Oh, man.
I have some posts coming, I promise, to anyone who does visit. I've been a little busy lately with school and work.
Well, we're glad you're back.
I always look for your updates.
I'm glad, too.
So.
I'm glad I found the time to be able to call in. I was worried that I wouldn't be able to calculate the time difference and I'd be fast asleep, but no, here I am.
Well, I'm glad you took time out of your sleep.
It's not even noon, so fortunately it isn't the middle of the night here.
Oh, okay, good. I'm always sketchy on the time difference between Australia and America. I've got a couple of friends in Australia, some faithful readers who are always emailing me. For me, it's first thing in the morning, but they're about ready to go to bed. So.
Yeah, well, it is tomorrow, I guess, or, well, for you guys, we're already a day ahead.
Yeah, I always look to Australia if I'm worried about the end of the world, because it's already tomorrow there, so I know the world hasn't ended.
Exactly.
the world's not going to end tomorrow because it's already tomorrow somewhere.
Right. So as long as we're here, it's all good.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, it's great. Yeah. Actually, I make a lot of money because Jess emails me from the future and tells me the results of sporting events in the United States for tomorrow, and then I'm able to bet on them and win. So I gave her a good kickback.
Yeah, it's something that Stephen and I do, right. I'll get the next week to you as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Jess.
Thanks for calling, Jess.
Thanks for having me.
You are the best. Take care.
You are.
Thanks, guys.
Night.
Thank you.
Oh, that was awesome. That was too cool.
Yeah.
All the way from Australia.
Yeah, I was trying to get on desperately on Christmas night because she was on, and so I ended up talking to her for a few minutes at the end of the show just because I had to break away from family and say, you don't understand, she's from Australia.
Well, if you're going to have a caller call in on a show, talk about a call-in. Wow, all the way from Australia. That's pretty awesome.
You know, like I said, I have faithful readers and friends, and they are that. They are faithful, and I love them for it.
Yeah, Australia loves you because don't forget, Dion Lister from Booktastic is based down in Australia, and I know they've been pushing you quite a bit, too. And so, yeah, we've got there's some definite love down there in Australia. And so,
some definite
fans and supporters.
Talking about, I don't want to butt in completely, but talking about love, we need to make sure that Michael gets his links out there so all the readers that love him can check him out on his links, too. So hit it, Michael.
Oh, okay. Yes, my website, www.bybymichaelwest.com, Facebook /bymichaelwest page, and Twitter /bymichaelwest. And it looks like there might be some more callers. Can we get any of them in real quick before we go?
I don't see any. I think we have about 5 minutes.
Oh, you know what? I'm seeing us. Never mind.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't know.
That shows you how much I pay attention to the switchboard on a normal night.
Alex can pretend.
I could do like the Swedish Chef voice, like I could skip question in Swedish Chef language, but that might get weird.
Okay. No, that's all right. I want to thank you guys for having me on this side of the phone for once.
Yeah, it was fun.
And
I don't think so, but it was awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm just really, really excited about this book, and I'm glad that the fans are finally going to get a hold of it and be able to read it, and hopefully when they get to the end, they don't want to kill me. So,
just said that you like audience reaction, Michael. So you just got to take
it
how it comes.
I know. I know. Be careful what you wish for. I've received some very, very cool and interesting memes from readers over the years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens after this book. But rest assured, the next book is coming. That's the question I've been getting for almost 2 years now is when's the next Legacy book coming out? So now people will read this one, and then in a couple of days or a month or whatever, I'll start getting the when's the next Legacy book coming out question again.
Well, I'll mention that this book has an exciting section, and it's got the also by Michael West up in the front. So if they read this, they can easily look and see what else you have out there.
Yeah, and that's another thing off my 10-year-old bucket list was that when I would pick up books by Stephen King was the first author I ever saw do that, where they would list all of his other books, and I would go through, and actually that was the first time I discovered The Dark Tower, because at the time The Dark Tower was released only as a limited edition, and I had no idea it had even come out. And I was like, what is this Dark Tower book? And so I started going, looking for everything, but it was because it was in the also buy list. And, I said, well, one day I'm going to have enough books out there that I can have an also buy list. And with the Legacy of the Gods book, too, I finally have an also buy list. And I got a little choked up. I'm not afraid to say.
Awesome.
But I just want to say thank you to all the readers out there, because the success that I've been able to enjoy while I'm not, in the Stephen King level or Michael Crichton level, all the success that I've had is because they have read my stuff and they enjoy my stuff and they want me to keep doing it. So as long as they want me to keep doing it and keep buying it, I get to do it. So I wouldn't have the joy and the career that I have without them. So I just want to, I can't leave the show off without saying thank you to all my faithful readers.
Aww.
Well, do a promo for next week,
Oh, next week, yeah. Join us next week. We've got a very special guest. I think we're going to make it another Hooks and Books segment. G. Tom Mack, if you don't know this dude, you need to check out his music. He wrote the very popular song Cry Little Sister for Lost Boys. We're going to be talking to him about, we're going to talk to him about vampires and his music, and maybe I'll make Michael West sing to him. I don't know.
No. No, but one of the last times I saw him was when Corey Haim was still alive, and they did a jam session of Cry Little Sister in the lobby during Horror Hound.
Was that Indianapolis Horror Hound?
That was Indianapolis. That was Indianapolis Horror Hound.
Yeah. Oh, I was there, and I didn't know you then. Dang. Awesome. But yeah, he's a lovely dude, so I cannot wait to have him.
You were naked
on.
In the parking lot.
That was the other Horror Hound. That wasn't Indianapolis. That was Cincinnati. And with that, good night, everyone.
Have a good night, everybody. Thank you, Michael.
Good night. Thank you.
Good night.